get started.
Yay!
Woo! Let's go. Yes, it's Susan's thing. You have to listen.
Let's listen to the Susan.
So you can't give it away.
Okay.
This is the name of my company. You say it.
The name of your company?
Shekhinah
Development Company.
Okay, say it again.
Shekhinah Development Company.
Or it's Shekhinah, is how I say it. So, Shekhinah Development Company. Anybody have a guess what Shekhinah means?
It's Indian for...
What?
Is it Indian or Hindu or what is it?
It's Hebrew.
Oh,
well, I told him he couldn't give it away.
I'm telepathing it to you.
It means part of it is about light or glory. Okay. It means the divine feminine form of glory. Sometimes the Holy Ghost is translated as Shekhinah or Shekhinah. Okay. So it's the divine feminine. And it's the glory of God come to earth. So the glory of God developing into a company or a group of people. So what is behind that name, do you think? The glory of God developing a group of people.
Molecular business gathering?
So like it's a gathering, it's molecular business, it's...
Sounds to me like Zion.
It's Zion, or a city of light. That is the whole... idea behind my company. It's very subliminal that when I develop things, I'm developing what I consider cities of light or God. So it's known in parts of the Bible Belt. So it's not very well known in Utah. So that's the name of the company. So the first community that Shekhinah Development Company is building is Springbrook Villages. And that's 90 acres between the town of Ephraim, which is about 6 miles from Manti, those that have been to Manti. It's where Snow College is. So it's between Ephraim and Spring City. And we're kind of off the beaten path. And the name Springbrook has kind of a connotation to it. My husband is a gymnast. His last name is Brook. He jumps on the trampoline a lot. Spring Brook. So that's just another little fun thing. But it's also by Spring City. So anyway, Spring Brook Village. So the new group of world servers is coming together in groups of all kinds. And DK has told us the establishing of right human relations is an aspect of the divine will for humanity. So the group field that's building right now around community and the desire to live more consciously can happen in urban or rural settings. We happen to be extremely rural. We're about an hour and a half from Provo, about 2 hours south of Salt Lake. So this 90 acres that we own was first purchased in 2010 with a group of about 25 people in the beginning. And the whole idea was that we were going to start a community. A lot of us had been studying the molecular relationship. And I was really big in trying to get that to be developed. I tried it first on the campground that a lot of you stayed with us during one of the gatherings. Tried it there, failed miserably. So it's just been something that's been on my heart and in my mind for a long time. The first time I tried to gather a group was back in the 80s when there was 5 acres for sale in the Camas Valley where I lived. And I tried to get my 3 brothers and their wives to come live there. And one of my brothers says, "Why would I want to live by you?" I was crushed. It's like, because we could be a group and we could do all these group things. And you know, I've just always been very, very keen on doing group things. It's just been something in my soul. So about 2008, I started gathering with a group of people that wanted to have a group experience, and we looked for a couple of years, looked at probably 2,000 or 3,000 acres of different pieces of land, trying to find 40 acres that we could build this community on. We finally found this piece of property in 2009, and they wouldn't sell just 40 acres. They said, if you're going to buy this, you've got to have 90 because I can't have the back property landlocked. So we had to buy the whole 90 acres. He charged us double the going rate. I was a real estate broker at the time, and I told everybody, this is double the going rate. And everyone decided as a group that we would do this. Well, it got entangled in legal difficulties over the years and became a really, really big mess. If you ever want to do community, beware. It's like marriage. You know, you're dating somebody and everything seems wonderful and you seem like you're really compatible, and then you get married and all the differences come up. And then you have to work out all the differences. With marriage, that's, you know, a one-on-one thing. But when you're doing it with 10 or 12 or 15 people, you can't believe the dynamics that come up. And I can easily understand now why back in 2001, when we were begging JJ to let us all move to Boise and start a group, he said, no. You guys aren't ready, and I don't want to deal with the personality stuff. And I just remember Larry Cannon and I were just heartbroken because we really, really wanted to move to Boise and have this group experience. And for some reason, I could never let it go. It's just part of my heart and part of my soul. So what you're seeing up here is the kind of home that I was involved in building for about 25 years, McMansions. A huge house with a lot of rooms, a lot of which are rarely used, on a big piece of property, and in a very desirable part of town. Sounds perfect, right? How many of you know your neighbor two houses away? Raise your hand if you know your neighbor two houses away. Okay, there's a few of you that actually do. Most people don't. Most people do not know their neighbors. And what I noticed as a real estate broker and talking to my clients after they bought these big, beautiful McMansions is that they were lonely, that they didn't really have any close-knit friends. And as I was helping these builders do all these, you know, subdivisions and all of this great stuff, people weren't happy. And I thought, there's got to be a different way to do this. My brother told me that in 10 years of living next door to somebody in Mesa or in Queens Creek, Arizona, he had seen the wife four times in 10 years outside of her car. He'd see her pull out of the garage, pull in the garage. That's all he saw. Maybe four times he saw her outside. That's in 10 years. And that is not that unusual in a lot of neighborhoods. So I thought, you know, that's crazy. So pollution is not only smog, it's noise. And these are the stressors of today. It's the noise. And I just wanted to mention something briefly on divisive politics and social issues. There's a method of training artificial intelligence, and it's called general adversarial network. And an AI learns through creating controversy and watching the reaction and then creating a new algorithm based on that reaction. And if you're posting divisive political and social issue posts, you're part of some machine learning to push your buttons. And a lot of the arguments and a lot of the things that you're seeing on the internet is actually AI posting or positing as a person and getting things stirred up. And because I helped train AI in a project for about 6 months, I learned to recognize their patterns. and what they were doing. And they're getting really good at it. It used to be it would take us a lot of time to train the AI, but then they got better and better and better, and it's about 2 weeks to train an AI to mimic a person pretty dang well. And you wouldn't know that it's AI. So it's the AI and not humans that are creating a lot of the divisiveness on the internet right now. And then people spread it like robots. They're just mindlessly spreading all of this stuff. Joshua?
You mean they're like bots commenting on other people's posts?
Yeah.
Because the algorithm also pushes certain things forward based on people's selections.
So there's the two things. You've got the algorithms that are pushing certain issues to your social media, and then you have the chat bots getting on your posts commenting. So there's two things going on at the same time. And the AI are predicted to be taking 40% of the jobs in the near future. And so this is going to have a huge impact on society and is another reason that community is going to be so important. So there's a lot of reasons for creating conscious communities in today's world. Sadly, the statistics are not promising. At any given moment, 30% of all entrepreneurs are severely depressed.
Entrepreneurs.
Because you always think, well, you know, if I was out on my own doing what I wanted to do, I'd be a lot happier than having a job. But the truth is, it's really difficult. And adults over 65, almost half of them, 42%, are reporting themselves to be lonely. And then I think the toughest category of all are young mothers with young children. And 40% of them are reporting themselves to be depressed. And then city kids are at an all-time high of being lonely. That's nearly 1 in 5 children are reporting themselves to a feeling of loneliness. And more than 70% of men ages 18 to 34 and 28% of women are reporting themselves to be addicted to pornography, which is about as opposite from community as you can get. Whatever you think about the morals of pornography, the fact is you're not interacting with people if you're interacting with pornography.
70% of men are addicted to pornography?
70%.
18 to 34.
What age group?
18 to 34.
Wow, that's
that are addicted. An inability to control it, that it controls them. And my young stepdaughter, when she was about 16, said, I cannot find anyone to date who is not either addicted to pornography or video games. And so that's what the younger generations are dealing with. Artie? These are pre-COVID, so I think they're probably much worse.
Yeah,
the pornography has gone way up. Child abuse has gone way up. So, yeah, these are pre-COVID numbers.
So my understanding is that pornography addiction is raising, the percentage is raising in females, too.
Yes. Yes. It's gone way, way higher. I think 28% is actually low for the 18 to 34 range. So I thought I had the answer. As a real estate broker, I knew that traditional neighborhoods were pockets of lonely, isolated people. And I figured that a community center surrounded by 6 triplexes was a more sustainable way to build. And it would create the type of community that would foster deep relationships. There would be, you know, dinners together in the community center. There'd be shared garden space, shared barn space. We were going to put all of this that I'm showing you on 5 acres and have 85 acres of open space to do stuff with. I was so excited. I went to co-housing conferences and eco-village type things, and I was really getting into this, and I was sure that I had the answer. But in 3 years of marketing this, not one family, not one couple, not one single person was ready to put any money into this. Because the kind of people that were interested in this kind of a community wanted it to be within 30 minutes of a large city. And the type of people that were interested in where the land was wanted 5 acres. So I was in a dilemma. This wasn't my project. I felt like the Lord had been guiding me, the Spirit had been guiding me every step of the way. And so I had to step back from my preconceived notions of co-housing and an intentional community. Oh, I thought I had that running for you. Sorry. So I spent $8,000 on architectural stuff and on getting videos made and all kinds of fun things to get people excited about this community. It didn't work. And I thought, how can it be that Spirit is telling me to develop this property and it's not working? And when I got really still and quiet after about 3 years, and I asked, what do I need to do differently? And the answer was pretty clear. You have to start where the consciousness of the people is. Not where you think they should be, not where you think you know better than all of the other developers how to develop a neighborhood, but you've got to start where the people are and then move them forward from there to build a good community. So it was back to the drawing board and doing more market research. And the market research said, do large lots. So my zoning allowed 18 lots. That's why I was having the 6 triplexes before, the 18 houses, because I knew that's all I could put on that property legally. So I created 18 lots ranging in size from about 3 acres to 6 acres. And all the lots are south-facing, so you can do passive solar. They all have some slope to the lot so that you could kind of tuck your house back into the hill a little bit and berm up the back of the house. And the lower brown colored lots was where the original community that I had dreamed, that's all the space it was going to take for the 18 homes. But there I am doing the 18 lots. And typically lots in the city are, you know, 40 to 70 feet wide. That's typical. And these lots have a minimum of 250 feet frontage. So they're quite wide, quite big lots. And I knew that I had to attract just the right kind of people, because what my market research was telling me, that people absolutely did not want HOAs. Homeowners associations. There was no way these freedom-loving people were going to allow somebody to tell them what color the roof was going to be. They just weren't going to put up with it. So I knew that we couldn't do HOAs. So I couldn't enforce some of the things that I knew needed to happen. Some of those sustainable things that I could see happening wrong. When I was in Saratoga Springs, Utah, helping to build houses, for every 10 houses that we built, one house went to the landfill. That's how much waste there is in building houses. 1 to 10. And when I checked with some general contractors when I was doing this presentation, I said, is this accurate? And a lot of them laughed and said, no, it's more like 1 in 7. They thought I was being generous, saying 1 in 10. So there is a ton of waste in the building industry. And I knew that permaculture principles were important. So how was I going to find people that believed in these principles that wanted to live in San Pete County, Utah? Because a lot of the people that were interested in co-housing or in community were liberals. And they're going, you want us to go to the middle of conservative Utah? Are you kidding me? There is no way I'm going to do that. So I had that to deal with, too. So permaculture principles, what are they? There's three main ones. The first one is care for the earth. And I don't know how many of you are big scripture readers, but if you read about Zion a lot in the scriptures, it talks about redeeming the land a lot, about redeeming the land. So care for the earth, provision for all life systems to continue and multiply, because humans can't flourish without a healthy earth. We've got to get this right, and we've gotten it so wrong so far. Then care for the people, that people actually had access to those resources necessary for their existence, quiet being a big one. People have to have some peace and quiet. They have to be able to feel at one with their property. As like I was telling somebody earlier, we did a lot of work in invoking devas to come to this land. DK talks a lot about devas, and you really can invoke them to come. I remember the first family that actually did come on the property. The wife was standing there looking at the land, and she was looking around kind of on an elevated hill, and she said, "This is sacred ground, isn't it?" And I said, "Thank you for recognizing it." And I knew at that moment that I had found the first right person, because she recognized the spirit of the... I mean, we had done many, many meditations on the land. We were consciously invoking to bring the Shekinah down onto the property. And we knew that if we could do that and anchor that glory of God on that property, that it would naturally attract the right people. And it also naturally repels the wrong people, as I found out in dealing with many people who didn't have the right heart.
What was the word you said, the word that described it all as one word?
Devas?
No, not devas.
The community?
The land, about the land.
Property?
No.
I'll think of it. We'll get it to you. I can't think right now.
If you're thinking of provisioning, that's good.
Not provisioning. You said a word that I didn't understand, and then you elaborated.
Sorry. Don't know. So I was also given a way to finance the project. I'm always telling Michael that I have these wonderful financial angels. I didn't know who they were, but I knew that they were always telling me how to do things. They actually told me how to get this property out from underneath a 501c3, which is incredibly difficult to do. I bought out the rest of the people, and as I was doing this, I'm being told how to do it. And as lawyers and the county and everybody's looking at how I did it, they said, "How the heck did you figure this out?" And I would just smile. You know, how do you tell them? It's your financial angels telling you how to do financial things. So I was told to do it in two phases. And the first phase is four lots. And without any real advertising, I sold all four lots in a couple of months. And like I said, the first person that came on the property that I showed it to realized that it was sacred ground. And then I told them, I said, "Do you want to choose your neighbors?" And they said, "Absolutely." And I said, "Well, I promise you that I will not advertise this property for this amount of time, and you can bring the people that you want to the property." And so they did. They brought at least 12 sets of people coming to look at the property. And a lot of them were interested, but they were more interested in phase two rather than phase one. And lo and behold, it ended up two of his brothers bought the lots. So there's three brothers that bought three of the four lots. Interestingly enough, their mother had died maybe 9 years before. And those three boys, as I call them, are like my son's age. a little bit older, a little bit younger, one about the same age. And I said, I'll be your mother. Because I could tell they needed that kind of nurturing. And so now I have three new sons. And it's really interesting when they call and ask me about the property, or it's like, we love you. Thank you. I mean, it's not your typical relationship developer to client. So the right people were brought. And the fourth couple that bought was some of the original 25 people that had been looking at the property 10 years before. And I was really excited for them to be a part of the project. And the reason I wanted them to be a part of the project is because they're biodynamic gardeners. If any of you are aware of Rudolf Steiner, he's also a theosophist, born a little before Alice Bailey, and he's done a lot of work in anthroposophy. Okay, and so he developed this biodynamic gardening that is very, very popular around the world that, again, invokes the devas to come on the property through various things that they do that some people might call magic, other people call them formulas. And these old farmers from the Midwest are doing it. It's really interesting to see who the biodynamic gardeners are. And the reason they're doing it is because the land responds so well to what's going on. And so the fourth couple are biodynamic gardeners, good friends of mine for years that I always hoped would be a part of this community, and they finally did it. They looked at so many houses in San Pete County and so much property, and I kept saying, Spirit is telling me you're supposed to be on this property. Why don't you come and look again? And years would go by. And finally they came and went, okay, it's time. And they did it. They bought it. So three of the four lots are being built on. The fourth lot, one of the brothers is building somewhere else and just wanted to hold on to that lot for his posterity because land is getting more and more scarce. So that lot will probably remain vacant for many years. Two of the brothers are computer programmers. One of the brothers that is going to be building is a plumber, has his own plumbing business, which is a much needed skill in San Pete County. It takes us 6 weeks sometimes to get a plumber to respond because they're so busy. So we really need a plumber. So that's great. Stan and Charlene that are on the fourth lot are going to be putting a Waldorf school, which is also a Steiner thing. So they're going to be putting a Waldorf school into their basement. And then they're going, part of the Waldorf schools are always biodynamic gardens. And so I thought I knew how to create community. I thought I knew how to attract the right people. And I had to get out of the way to let the right people show up to start.
How many lots are there altogether?
18. So four sold.
Yeah.
Legally, I can't sell any more lots, but people can invest in Shekinah Development Company, and some people have. And so when the lots are developed, they will then turn their investment into a purchase of a lot.
So some help with the development, bringing electricity and water to them?
Yes, I have to. Oh, yeah. Dealing with the county is always fun. So right now there's a shortage of pipe. So you need pipe for water, you need pipe for underground power, and you need pipe for underground internet. Because everybody that's seriously interested in living there has to have very high quality internet. We've got to bring fiber optics in, which is going to cost $100,000, by the way. So people think developers make all kinds of money. Yeah, well, we pay out a lot of money, too. I've got the well drilled, but it's okay for the four lots, but when I do the 14, I have to drill a new well because the old well wasn't drilled to the specifications of a public water system. I've got to put 50,000 gallon tank of water up on the top of the hill, got to gravity feed the water to all the lots. You know, it's a complicated thing when you go through developing property. And debatable at this point. I've got the four shares for the first four lots, but right now, because of the droughts, water is hard to come by. Farmers are not wanting to give up any of their water shares because each water share used to be this much water. Now it's this much water. So it's harder to get people to let go of their water shares. So I think that's another reason I was told to do it in four phases. The reason that I was doing a public water system is because all the water is on the east end of the property, and the west end of the property I do not believe has good sources of water. When I water witched it, and this is the dirty little secret of real estate agents in the rural areas, most of us water witch. They don't talk about it, but most real estate agents know how to water witch. Yeah. And so I water witched the property back in 2010, and I found, you know, usually your rods just cross like this. When I found the source of water, it started spinning about this fast. It meant there was a huge amount of water underneath. And when I brought the geologist in to double check me, he says, oh yeah, there's water here 500 feet down. There's probably a river down there. He said, but it's 500 feet. And then he took me down on another piece of the property and said that it would be a lot more shallow to hit water, and it was about 150 feet. And we have one of the best wells in the county as far as gallons per minute. So we have a very good well, but I can't use it, even though I've got enough water coming out of that well, for the other 14 lots. Because of the rules. It's all about the rules. So I've got to buy 14 more shares of water. I got to drill another well to be the specifications that the state requires, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then I have to tell people, you can only have four large animals on your property, horses, cows. You can have goats and sheep and chickens and all that kind of stuff, but you can only have four large animals with that kind of a water share. So that's kind of what we're up against.
And how do you deal with the sewage treatment?
Septic, which is actually more sustainable. So one of the three ideas of permaculture is to recycle your waste, and so that is actually a very sustainable way to do it.
What are the four stages? You said you will do four stages.
Two phases. And one had four lots in it.
I thought you said four phases.
Nope, just two. One with four lots. So I originally wanted to build a smallish home. We went from a 4,800 square foot home when we moved to Manti into a 700 square foot home because I thought, tiny home movement, we can do this, be more sustainable. We had a very large storage unit. We lived 5 years in that home, and we went, okay, this is too small. We can't even be in the kitchen at the same time. So we decided, you know, maybe 1,100 square feet would be more livable on one floor. And so that's what I was going to do. But the community center was taken away from this original plan, and I really felt like that was the core of building a community. So I started praying about it, and it was like, build your home bigger. Build a bigger house and put the community center in the basement. So I think it's, 1,800 square feet, our plan, with 1,800 square feet in the basement so that you can fit 18 families into the basement for community dinners, community meetings. And then we found a beautiful home in Manti and bought it. And now Michael's going, I don't know if I want to, you know, build a house out there. So who knows what's going to happen. So what I told them, because lumber was so hard to find, is I suggested that they go to this kind of block. It's called Easy Block, and it throws air into the block, and it insulates. And so you just have to spray the outside with stucco. You spray mud on the inside. You don't have to do a lot of sheetrock. It saves a lot of money. So three of the houses that are being built are going to be building with this Easy Block. And everybody building is very aware of the permaculture ideas.
That's the word.
Permaculture.
What is it?
Yeah. Permaculture means it's a type of development, permanent culture. It's a way of developing the land. So that it flows with the animals, flows with the landscape. It's good for everybody.
Culture is the word culture.
Yeah. Permaculture. So they're aware of the benefits of building with swales on the land. So that's all working. So they're doing what I wanted them to do. So right human relations, community, I thought I knew how to build it. And I had to revamp everything. And letting spirit guide how it was supposed to be built, the process has been a whole lot easier. And there's 14 more lots to come, actually 12, because two are spoken for already for phase two. And all in all, Springbrook Village is going to be a pretty awesome place to live for any age, a great neighborhood with lots to do nearby.
You're going to knock that.
Yeah. It solves some of the problems of isolation and loneliness because it's a pretty tight, it's a private community behind a gate. So those 18 families will get to know each other pretty well. And they're still going to have the kind of privacy that they need. And so they can live in conscious communities surrounded by beauty. Darren?
So once the 18 phase is finished, is there more expandability?
There's 3,000 acres surrounding this property. So, and it's all owned by the same guy who will require double the... he requires double the price of what the land is actually worth, and he will prove it by pointing to my subdivision as proof that it really is worth that much. You know, forgetting that it costs $1 million to $2 million to put the infrastructure in, depending on what the pipe prices and stuff are going to be by the time we actually do the second phase. So it's not cheap.
How much is land up, like per acre out there?
So I was selling like 5 acres for $125,000 plus a $10,000 hookup fee. Prices are going up substantially.
Come out there.
Yeah. So wow. The prices will be going up. It'll probably be more like $175,000 for 5 acres.
Wow.
How much is it now, you say?
It was $125,000, but prices tripled on me.
Yeah, it depends on where you're at. Queen Creek, where you're talking,
yeah.
5 acres would cost you millions.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, true. Yeah. It's all relative, you know, location. So, any questions?
What's the nearest major town?
Ephraim. Ephraim on one end, which has a college, has a Walmart, you know, has a bunch of little stores. Then there's Spring City, which is an artsy town, has a lot of artists. It's a historical, registered town, really cute little place. So,
how far is it to Ephraim?
3 miles.
Okay.
No, that's not bad.
5 miles to Spring City.
So instead of a septic, is composting acceptable?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The only thing we ended up saying anything about was you have to follow the rules for fire danger. So you have to build your house to withstand a certain amount of fire, and you can't have trees too close to your house. So we have an association that covers the road and the water system, but it's not an HOA, even though legally it is. But it's not an HOA that can tell you how to build your house or what to build or what colors or anything like that. The only thing it covers is the water system and the road system. So DK talks a lot about groups, group energy, and how dangerous it can be for the focal point of any group, and how if we are critical of a group leader, that it can affect their health. So after 6 or 7 years of dealing with the group that I was in, I was one of the focal points, I got Lyme's disease. And according to DK, that is not too unusual for the group leader to get sick. And there's also another reason I understood maybe why JJ wasn't thrilled about starting a group community, because it can be dangerous having all that energy if people aren't happy with how things are going or things. It can create a lot of problems. So I would just caution us as a group to send JJ lots of love and don't be critical even if you disagree. You know, it's a thing. And I learned it firsthand, so anyway.
Can attest to the same thing.
Yeah.
Other group dynamic. Dan Howell. Remember Dan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been involved in groups and they've blown up.
Yeah, yeah. He's down in South America.
Uh-huh.
I think one of the challenges that we're dealing with, and I think it's a big one for people on a spiritual path, is how do we connect and work as souls, soul to soul, without letting personality stuff get in the way.
Yeah.
And if anybody has the answer to that, I'd love to hear it. We've really wrestled with it, and it's you have to deal with reality. This is what is, and yet, you know, we're trying to connect on a deeper level, come together as a group soul, so we can really do more effective service and help ground that light more. But I think that's one of the big challenges. But I've come to realize I don't even know what group is. We had a really good concept. It's like, nah, I don't think so.
So whenever you're stepping out of what people are used to, I have a little video about that.
Yeah, me too.
So that's, anyway.
What's the video called?
You've got How to Build a Movement. So look that up later. It's pretty funny. And so that's how we are working on building a movement. So, thank you.
Thank you.
So you ready to take orders anytime for the rest of us?
Yep. You'll be investing in the
line up, you guys.
Company.